15 minutes later, he saw the proverbial light at the end of the tunnel. The duct widened and flattened into a diffuser to help mask the exhaust from thermal imaging. There were thin vertical bars over its mouth to prevent someone from entering the duct. He could see the ocean surging about 8 feet below him. It had to be high tide. Otherwise, water would pour down the exhaust duct when it came in. Satisfied he had enough room to squeeze through, he gripped each thin metal bar and bent it outward. He poked his head outside. There was a narrow platform immediately below, and a ladder to his right that led upward. He was just turning to look to the left when he was grabbed by the shoulders and yanked out of the exhaust shaft. It happened so fast he had no time to react before he was thrown onto a dock. Two guards stood over him, each with a submachine gun slung under his arm. They had the look of professionals.
"And just what do you think you're doing, mate?"
The guard spoke with a thick Cockney accent. The other guard stepped back to cover his partner.
"Who are you?" he demanded.
"Hiya, fellas. I'm Dusty Pipes from the Acme Chimney Sweep Company."
"It's Max," Holly cried, as soon as he saw the guards haul a figure out of the exhaust vent. Juan snapped around to look at George Adams.
"Last resort. Let's go."
"On your feet," the first guard snapped, and when Hanley was slow to cooperate, he was kicked in the hip.
Max held out his hands like a supplicant.
"Take it easy, boys. You got me fair and square. I'm not going anywhere."
Something out to sea caught his attention. He squinted into the setting sun and saw a tiny white orb hovering next to it. Another burst just below, and then a third. If a hunter is ever lost in the woods, the internationally recognized call is to fire 3 evenly spaced rounds to attract search parties. The flares weren't a distress call from a ship in trouble. It was Juan, telling him the Oregon was here to rescue him. He had never given up hope, so he really wasn't that surprised, but it took effort to keep a smug look off his face. One of the guards was on his walkie-talkie, getting orders from a superior.
"Nigel, Mr. Severance wants to see this bloke right away. They're going to open the outer doors only when we arrive."
He poked Max in the back with his gun.
"Move it!"
Max took a halting step and collapsed onto the dock.
"I can't go on. My legs all cramped from crawling out here. I can't feel it."
He clutched his knee with the theatrics of a soccer player hoping to draw a foul on an opponent. The guard named Nigel fired a single bullet into the dock inches from Max's head.
"There. Bet it isn't so cramped now, eh?"
Max got the message and hoisted himself to his feet. He made a show of limping ahead of them, and when he slowed too much for their taste, he was shoved in the back. The Black Robinson helicopter suddenly thundered around the headland like a raptor chasing prey and dove straight for the dock. George kept the nose down so the blades chewed the air a few feet above the timber jetty. Max was already on his stomach from the push as the chopper roared overhead, scattering the guards in its wake. The Robinson R-44 swooped in, hovering as Cabrillo reached out to drag Max aboard.
"Thought you'd never show up," Max cracked as he climbed aboard.
"You're a difficult man to get hold of,"
Juan returned.
"Let's get out of here, Gomez."
With that, Gomez pulled back on the stick and headed for home. Racing over Greenland like a vengeful demon, the Soviet orbital ballistic projectile satellite was going through the last of its systems checks as it prepared to launch one of its 1,800-pound tungsten rods. Inside the external case, the telephone pole-sized projectile had been spun up to 1,000 RPMs to give it stability for when it hit the atmosphere. The targeting computer, archaic by today's standards, but more than sufficient for the task, waited with single-minded focus as the satellite hurtled toward the proper coordinates. A tiny burst of compressed gas vented from one of its maneuvering rockets when it detected the need for a minute course correction. The cover over the launch tube slowly peeled open, like the petals of a flower, and for the first time in its life, the tungsten core was exposed to the vacuum of space. It continued to streak over the Earth as the planet rotated below it, every second bringing it closer to its firing position with no regard to the drama playing out below.